This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
This is the Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. I'm Keith Kam. Aerospace sounds really, really cool. It evokes images of going boldly where no man has gone before and where one small step for man can be a giant leap for mankind. Not so much for gender neutrality. Anyway, it is also an industry for which the Malaysian government identified some 6 years ago as one that has the potential to raise the country's technological prowess. And so the Malaysia Aerospace Industry Association was born in March 2016. MAIA's aim is to promote, develop and grow the aerospace industry. MAIA's president, Najib Mohamad, is with us this morning. So, Najib, talk to us about MAIA's raison d'etre, KPIs, the achievements you've made so far.
Oh, thanks very much, Keith. So, MAIA, as you said, established in 2016. We were actually established in partnership with the Malaysian International Trade and Industry Ministry, right? So since then, we grew from what was effectively a 10-company outfit to 80 companies. Now, we represent from the largest multinationals, which includes people like Safran, people like Spirit Aerosystems, and down to the SMEs that involve the supply chain. And also since then, we've been engaged quite heavily in sort of the supply chain development, both for the maintenance and the manufacturing of aircraft components, right? And then we've also engaged a lot with the education side of the industry to support manpower supply and also supporting the institutions to upgrade their capabilities so that they can supply the right kind of manpower to the industry.
Now, the government's aspiration is to become an aerospace and aviation hub for the Asia-Pacific region. Really lofty ideals here. There was also a national aerospace blueprint that came out in 1997 to make Malaysia an aerospace player by 2015. And then a 2030 version was launched in 2015. Take us through the achievements seen from the 1997 plan first.
So when you have to understand, in 1997, we were very much an airline operator, right, with the maintenance, repair and overhaul capabilities as part of the support of Malaysian Airlines, if you like. It expanded somewhat since then because I think the MRO for Malaysian Airlines was established around the 70s, Malaysian Airlines Engineering. Also then there was a large military capability at that time. So what's happened between then and the end of the first blueprint was that it set out to grow the manufacturing sector and diversify on the MRO, right? So I think in that time also GE Engine Services was firmly established and a few other component repair guys, FOL services and so on and so forth. On the manufacturing side, that grew quite significantly. So we added two major OEMs, Spirit Aerosystems, and Airbus, although not doing OEM work, it was actually doing services work for in-service issues of Airbus, right? But it's a regional center. And then since then, UMW Aerospace in the aircraft engine manufacturing segment. So I think the first blueprint achieved something like 70-odd% of its KPIs. So that was quite successful, I think. The second blueprint looks at growing that even further and deepening the capabilities, right? So at the end of the first blueprint, also design capability came in. And that was actually my company, Strand Aerospace Malaysia, as one of the leading organizations for that. And we actually did the design and build, right, for A320 components and the A380. So the A380, the main spar, for example, was designed in Malaysia. That holds up about 70% of the weight of the wing of the the weight of the aircraft. So major structural item and parts are manufactured, but all designed in Malaysia. So I think in as far as KPI is concerned, the second one is obviously underway with the aim of what 50 odd billion, mm-hmm, in revenue by the year 2030. We were at 16.2 billion in 2019 just prior to COVID, and so we're hoping on the recovery for sort of more exponential growth, if you can put it that way.
That 16.22 billion for 2020, it shrank about 30%. What's the outlook like right now that things have started to pick up again?
So first, we had a recovery plan. So MAIA had a recovery plan on the onset of the crisis. We got together with all the other CEOs and we decided what would be the trajectory to recover, right? So we saw 2021 as the beginning of the uptick towards the end of 2021, which is where we're at now. And that 22-23 being the leveling to 2019, right? Now, earlier in this year, it looked a little bit grim. But what's interesting, I think, if you compare Q1 sort of sentiment to today's sentiment, right? You're talking about 20-30% more optimism in the airlines. But I'm talking globally here, you know, maybe not local airlines, but globally the airlines are more upbeat. Now, 60% of the Malaysian manufacturing and MRO is for single aisle aircraft, the 737 and the A320. So that's regional travel. So I think, as you know, that's obviously the bit that's growing fastest, right? So we found that most of our companies were about, from what was a pessimistic two-year movement to the right in terms of the targets, it's now come back to roughly about where we were headed. So that was good. But the key thing now is to ensure that we have the new capabilities and capacities to tackle what would be the industry upon recovery of COVID, after COVID.
So this 2030 blueprint, how is Maya looking to make all these different moving parts work?
So we're an ecosystem. Right. And interestingly, the thing about the aerospace industry, Keith, is that it's part of a global industry. Right. So there are only two major aircraft manufacturers, which is Airbus and Boeing. So anybody making parts or maintaining parts for these aircraft is maintaining at the same level. And a company in Malaysia is working at the same level as a company in Hamburg, Germany, for example. Right. So that's really interesting because as a supply chain, then we have that level of maturity in the Malaysian supply chain. So when we say the different moving parts now, what we have is predominantly the large companies which are bringing in sort of the anchor workflows. And then you have the SME supply chain, which then provides the value add. Right. Our biggest challenge is in the SME side. Right. And this is nothing new. This is an industry 4.0 problem. You go across every industry in Malaysia, E&E, M&E, and so on and so forth. I'm part of the Malaysian E&E, M&E's association as well. You see these issues. So I think the moving parts are there. The question now is whether or not post-COVID, there's enough drive to transform the supply chain capabilities and increase SME value add. So that's the biggest challenge, but, you know, it's the Malaysian challenge. It's not the aerospace industry's challenge, right, per se.
Now, one thing that piqued my interest in the 12th Malaysia plan, references were made to the aerospace industry. They called it a game changer. Do you think Malaysia might be moving a little bit too slowly in this game?
Well, that's interesting to say. So first of all, it's a 50-year-old industry, 50-plus-year-old, right? So like I said, Malaysia Airlines, you know, back in the 60s, that's when they started the maintaining of aircraft, right? And the capabilities that we've developed, Composite Technology Research Malaysia, for example, in Batu Redam, Melaka, I think it's one of the three top suppliers of composites to the Airbus group as a whole. Airbus Customer Services Malaysia in Sepang is only one of four centers of Airbus Customer Services in the world, taking care of this entire region. So any issues in Abu Dhabi or in Dubai will come to Malaysia, right, to resolve. So, and it's all Malaysian manpower, like 200 roughly technicians, technical people there, all Malaysians. So I think the growth of the industry now, right, is very much contingent on us realizing our national ambitions to become a high-tech nation. You know, so what I would say the aerospace industry is, it is a gateway. We've already set the standards and we, you know, we don't create a Malaysian or a Asian aircraft. We create a global standard aircraft every single time, right? So anybody entering that supply chain or able to do the kind of work that we need is already at another level of capability. So when you look at process and technology capabilities, these companies are much more ready for 4.0 than companies which may be doing, you know, very low mix, high volume type of consumer goods. So I think that's where we are, a gateway industry for RMK12.
So that's the ambition there, is to have 55.2 billion ringgit in revenue annually from aerospace to create 32,000 jobs. Where are we? What still needs to be done to attract aerospace players? Like, you know, they're just two large airplane manufacturers in the world.
Sure. And it's a nice chunk of it, right? So if you look at GE Engine Services in Malaysia, just prior to COVID, it was at 3 billion ringgit a year revenue, right? So the trajectory for that based on the growth of low-cost carriers, right, globally, was to get, I think GE roughly would get to around 9 to 10 billion by 2030. it looks like it's even possible that it may exceed those numbers, right? If aviation or regional aviation grows faster than what we anticipate, right? Also, companies like GE Engine Services are also high quality in terms of their capabilities. So we find that there's work being rerouted to Malaysia because of the quality. So we also have the China-US, you know, challenge, right? Economic challenge. And we find that the dual sourcing now is becoming a priority for a lot of the OEMs, you know. So when we talk about a carve out from the Airbus and Boeing story, right, the 55.2 billion ringgit, right, is actually certainly a very achievable number. If I just add another 7-8 billion from GE to my 16.2 billion, right, I'm halfway there, right? Now, yeah, UMW is already doing at peak, it'll be doing a billion a year roughly. If it adds some more, that's just one product. That's just the fan case, right? So if it does more products, then it increases that, you know. So Spirit, and then CTRM, and maybe two or three more players. And don't forget, we're still talking about airlines here. Air mobility is coming into play. So today, you know, you've got Volocopter trialing already down in Singapore. There's some talks with Malaysia Airports, for example. There's a whole segment of aerospace, which includes space, Elon Musk, and so on and so forth, which yet to tap into. And you see Serbadiomic talking about you know, rocket launching in Sarawak. So I think it's a very, very fertile industry. It is the future. It is the capabilities that we want. So I don't see it as lofty. I see it as a stretch target, perhaps.
So you think you should have higher targets then?
I think so. I think as a country, you have to understand, you know, when we do this shift, right? Aerospace, when I support companies going from non-aerospace to aerospace, you see a seismic shift in terms of how the management thinks, how they look at long-term plans, because a lot of Malaysian companies are very reactive, right? Because they are basically off-taking from large, electronics companies or whatever it is, right? So, and hence why the business model has evolved a lot to depend on labor arbitrage. But with aerospace, we have 98%+ of our manpower is all Malaysian and all high skilled. You know, even the guy who's cleaning the shop floor has to know what he's doing because he could contaminate the aerospace parts. So a health and safety incident in an aerospace factory is not a putus jari problem. You know, it's actually a product integrity issue, right? So it's a different mentality. So yeah, I think we should be looking for more if Malaysia is able to transform.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Najib Mohamad Noor, President of the Malaysian Aerospace Industry Association, or MAIA. In a little while, we'll find out if the sky is really the limit for Malaysia's aerospace aspirations. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
This is BFM 89.9. I'm Keith Kam, and you're with us on The Breakfast Grill, where we are chatting with Najib Mohamad Noor, President of the Malaysia Aerospace Industry Association. Now, Najib, you have very lofty, sky-high targets to achieve. You have to do this with intense competition. You know, the Southeast Asia aircraft MRO market is valued at $4.2 billion in 2020. It's expected to reach $6.5 billion by 2026. How much of this market can you realistically hope to capture?
So as I mentioned before the break, you know, GE Engine Services on its own is about $1 billion, right, in terms of its revenue, and that's looking good to maybe double or triple potentially. You also have companies like SR Technics, which are sort of MRO logistics providers, right, or what you call parts rotable. So the parts side of the MRO. So you have to look at it very holistically, right, not just the maintenance of certain large equipment. It's also the sub activities associated with that. The capabilities in Malaysia are regionally, they are leading capabilities. I think we are at par with Singapore on certain things. Some things we're better and certain things Singapore is better. Certainly, in as far as focus is concerned, yes, Singapore is much more focused in terms of what it wants from its aerospace industry. We are becoming more and more focused in terms of what it is that the Malaysian government wants from the aerospace industry. Hence, if you look at RMK-12, the aerospace industry prior to this in RMK-11 and so on and so forth was under the transport industry. So now it's given its own focus and that elevated position with the economic planning unit. Now that's congruent with how aerospace is looked at in China, in Japan, in Korea. It's a leading apex industry to drive industrial transformation and technology development.
Something intrigued me just before the break that you said, before I get started on competition in the region, is that I'm just curious, what changes need to happen in Malaysia's ecosystem to attract the Elon Musks and the Jeff Bezoses of the world to Malaysia?
So these guys are running technologically complex operations, right? So whilst we have no shortage of paper qualified people, right? We do have a gap in sort of tacit technological knowledge because of our industry. Although we have very large industry in, you know, E&E, machinery, equipment, and so on and so forth, not a lot of it is in the highest end of design and build, right? And the understanding of these deep processes is what's required to facilitate more complex businesses. And so if you talk to any business owner today trying to do Industry 4.0, the issue is going to be that level of competence right down to the shop floor. So I think that's the challenge. Now, obviously, we are a major education hub, so we have the infrastructure to achieve that. I think there needs to be a bit of a tipping point here in terms of the pressure for institutions and industry and government to form the triple helix in a way that is more concrete, so that the industries like Amazon and like SpaceX and so on and so forth can then see this as a major knowledge hub as per what you would consider in Singapore, right? And Singapore has a land issue, you know, in terms of its size, you know? So I think we're primed. We're definitely primed. It's about the next 2 or 3 years, right?
The next 2 or 3 years. Is that being overly optimistic though?
I don't know. I think, you know, I mean, COVID-19 has been a major challenge, but at the same time, it's been a major driver for change, right? I think some people have said it's the best CTO you could have ever had, right? Because it's driven organizations to absorb change like nobody's business, right? So this kind of situation, plus what the global economic outlook is going to be like, more regionalized business, more regionalized economies, right? Puts us at the center of the Southeast Asian technological opportunity, if I can put it that way, right? We have the critical mass. We are synergistic with Singapore, I would say. Probably we are able to be more focused than some of the more developing countries. The question is whether in the next 2 or 3 years we can get our act together to tap into these opportunities and, you know, firmly root ourselves as sort of the champions of this kind of technology. And I think aerospace, we can prove it with that in the region. For everything to do with aerospace, not just aircraft manufacturing and MRO, but maybe even urban air mobility and other things, then yes, we have the opportunity to be the leader in the region.
Getting our act together, what do you mean by that?
I think it's something where we are a very blessed country, right? Natural resources, you know, and every country blessed with natural resources like us faces the similar type of challenge, right? You go anywhere in the world, there's oil, you know, there's stuff that comes out of the ground that you can sell. People become more, I think, relaxed in terms of, you know, technological development and so on and so forth. You know, so our sort of middle ground is we became an education hub. We've not become a technology hub. We become an education hub. So it's somewhere between, you know, that aspiration and being totally agrarian and, you know, commodities based, right? So I think the next 2-3 years, as, you know, oil, you know, we'll have this fluctuation in terms of pressure on oil. You've got ESG requirements coming in thick and fast, you know. So a lot of the operations which may not be ESG compliant will now not be able to operate or have to transform. This confluence of events is probably going to push us to a point where the new growth will start, right? And I'm optimistic of, you know, your 30-year-olds, your 20-year-olds, and I'm Gen Xer. So I'm sort of the bridge between the two, right? Building a new Malaysia. I would say we are almost like coming out of the Second World War, right? Like Korea coming out of Second World War and building a new, fresh new economy.
Like a reset for everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you know, Singapore, they're not as blessed as us when it comes to natural resources, but they've been a major MRO player for decades now. And in 2020, they accounted for a quarter of the Asian market. What sort of challenges, other challenges that we can expect, and you know, how can we gain some market share out of Singapore rather than just taking their crumbs?
I think certainly we're not taking the crumbs, right? So let's not be too dramatic about that. Okay, so we're certainly doing a significant share of the work. What Singapore has been very focused on, particularly with MRO, is they've taken engine MRO to another level, right? So interesting enough, when the overhaul happens in Subang, where the aircraft engine is taken apart, the subcomponents are sent to Singapore, right? And the US and the UK for the maintenance, you know? So there is an opportunity for us to localize those things closer to where the engine is going to come back together again and be tested, all right? Okay, so I think synergizing with Singapore is going to be a major thing. Now, Maya works very closely with the Aerospace Industry Association of Singapore as well, looking at these opportunities, you know? So the Industrial Transformation Asia Pacific Conference will be happening in November, and hopefully we'll have a joint event there as well, you know? So let's look further apart, away from there, because, you know, regional travel is going to increase, right? With the regional economic growth. And I think aviation in whatever form that may be, or aerospace technology in whatever form that may be, let's say we put a hyperloop between us and Surabaya, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. That hyperloop is aerospace technology. Yeah. So aerospace technology and capabilities, if we are looking at ensuring we have that high level of technology capability, manufacturing capability, maintenance capability, then we will be playing in a growing market, maybe not one that you can historically reference.
Now, you talk about localizing. Are our SMEs ready to take part in this? What needs to change for them? I mean, apart from education policies, I suppose.
Yeah, well, okay, let's take that in two parts, right? Education and the SMEs. So SMEs, biggest challenge in Malaysia. The DNA of our SMEs is an off-taker, right? So historically, an SME in Malaysia for, let's say, the E&E sector would be someone who have worked in the shop floor of a Panasonic or an Intel or something like that. He would have come out, he would have got a bank loan, bought his first machine, outsourced from there, and grown his company. And today he's a multimillionaire, right? But that DNA is not the same as, say, a German startup, which, you know, three generations ago were clockmakers doing precision engineering on clocks, and eventually today are in aerospace, right? So the DNA is very different. One is more an off-taking, the other one is the technology development. So because of that, even in Singapore, when I go there to visit and I talk to SMEs there in conferences, they have the same problem, because they now need to look at a long-term strategy with a technology roadmap. And, you know, how many SMEs have a roadmap? So this is the transformation that when I work with people like SME Corp, we're trying to instigate as a hand-holding sort of process with the SMEs, you know? So we need to take a bit more care in terms of how we transform these SMEs. You can't just throw stuff at them and say, you know, here's a bunch of money and here's some opportunities, go and get it, right?
Yeah, so it's just a never-ending hole.
You got to walk them through the process. You got to walk them through the process, and we got to take that time to build now.
And as for the education system, are we ready to face challenges like these?
So the education system at the moment is a mill, right? It's a paper mill. And no disrespect to the educators who've dedicated. I'm on the board of studies, the industrial advisory board for several universities, right? Most of their challenge in the education sector is that most of the industry around them is not high tech. So if you look at them trying to supply to a high-tech industry, you know, in the factory that's got 70% foreign laborers in them, right? Well, how much actual high-end graduate requirement is there? Now, when that requirement isn't there, the institutions then struggle with context. They can come up with syllabus, but what's the context of that? Where are they learning from, right? What is the industrial input into it? So I think this part of the triple helix needs to be understood better, and you need to prototype some transformations of certain institutions before we can really use institutions to drive economic development. And I think EPU understands this, and if you look at RMK12, there's a lot of indications of this understanding and how to resolve these issues.
Fascinating chat with you, Najib. We have been talking to Najib Mohamad Noh, President of the Malaysia Aerospace Industry Association, or MAIA. This is BFM 89.9, and you have been with us on The Breakfast Grill.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.